This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now, did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. All right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go.
This episode is brought to you by This Is Elle, Storyworth, and Zola, and we are super happy to have them on board. Hi, everybody.
Hi, welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk. I'm Jamie.
Oh, you're doing like sexy scientist voice. I'm Robin.
I didn't know I could do that.
I didn't either. You are a VO artist, Jamie.
I am one of those. But usually I play little tiny people with high voices.
It's true, you do. Yes. I never recognize your voices when you do them.
That's amazing.
I don't.
Really?
I really don't.
I'm like a chameleon.
You are.
Look at that shit. Anywho.
Okay. By the way, this is going to be a really short intro because we got a big motherfucking guest today.
Huge.
Okay.
But don't ruin it. Don't ruin it.
Wait, I got one bit of business before we get into that. Okay.
Yeah.
We want to remind all of our listeners that we're on our new little schedule, right? Mm-hmm. Where we're always on, except for some weeks where we're not.
Which is killing us softly.
Anyway, okay, so listen, back to the point. Don't forget that we only have one more episode. So next week, Monday, 12/16, and then we are off for 3 weeks and we're back on January 13th. So we're going to be on a little much needed holiday break.
We're going to need that. Because
our kids are going to be off from school. So it will not really be a vacation.
And we're going to be, no, it's not vacation. But it's the holidays, so that's
just
fun.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
It's going to be this little eggnog with rum in it.
Yeah, just try not to miss us too much.
You won't. We know that. It's okay. But listen, while you're on your little holiday break and you're feeling all giving, join our Patreon community.
Join us. Leave your kingdom.
Because we got all kinds of extra bonus content on there. Parenting tips, fertility talk, general idiocy that is Jamie and Robin over there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, come join us.
Yep. And you can get a lot more of this ridiculousness.
Yeah. Get us at patreon.com/ovariestalk to join.
So normally we would fill you in on something that's happening in our lives. Yep, you know, we give you a little
story
background on Robin and Jamie, but today we're not going to do that because you don't want to hear from us.
No, because
and I'll tell you why.
Today our guest is
Rosie motherfucking O'Donnell. Rosie fucking O'Donnell. So Rosie, did you hear me the first time or the second?
We're getting right to it. Okay.
Oh my God.
Let's do it. Okay. Rosie.
Rosie, come here.
Don't you have to do some, hey, welcome to our show with our guest today.
We'll do that on the side.
I think you just did it.
Yeah. There it is.
I mean, you are a talk show host. So
that's right.
You should just
fall back into that.
Okay, so we should tell everybody. We have Rosie O'Donnell here.
Rosie fucking O'Donnell, or as Melanie Griffiths would say, she always puts the curse in the middle of the word. So when I did a movie with Melanie Griffith, not to name drop right
please
away.
Please do.
She would always curse. Like most people say, give me a fucking hot dog. But she would always say, give me a hot fucking dog. And I was like, Melanie, you're putting the curse in between the compound word. That's not how it goes.
I mean, she can do whatever she wants. She's Melanie Griffith.
Fucking great.
Wait, I was like, how do you do that? Mel fucking knee Griffith? It's hard to do.
Works.
It's hard.
It's very difficult.
Hot fucking dog made me laugh for 2 weeks.
Hot fucking dog. I mean, I like that.
Yeah.
My daughter's just started saying fuck it. So that's she's five. That's fun.
Yeah. Well, it's surprising because I have five and I cursed in front of all of them and most of them don't curse. My one in the Marines does, but I think that's part of
the Marines.
Part of being a Marine.
And the other ones don't curse.
They don't really. I mean, you know, considering how much I do, that they grew up in the house with me.
It's like that thing. Like if your parents were really clean, then you're a mess. It's like that
Alex
thing.
P. Keaton being a Republican.
Well, that's what I thought about my son joining the Marines. I'm like, how do you piss off your left-wing pacifist mother?
That's tough.
That's one way to do it.
Tough.
I'll get your attention.
Yeah. How did you guys like reconcile that? Like, is it an issue for you or do you just like overlook it?
Well, you know, we were here at 9/11 and he was 6 years old. And it changed everything for him. He used to draw the Knights of the Round Table and King Arthur and castles. And then as soon as that happened, all he did was draw army stuff.
Yeah.
When, you know, all of a sudden there were men with machine guns on the George Washington Bridge.
Yep.
You know, you remember that time if you were here. It was pretty terrifying.
It was.
And he would go to the little firehouse next door to our apartment and this little towhead blondie and these huge men crying in their blues, their dress blues. He would tap on their, you know, jacket on the bottom and say, I'm sorry your friends died trying to save people.
Oh my God.
And he wanted to go every week for like a year.
Wow.
He ended up going, stopping by there.
Wow.
And so I think it had a profound effect on his psyche.
Yeah.
And that's what he wanted to do since 9/11.
Yeah. And you can't really say anything about that. Just like, okay, then.
He does say beautiful things like, you know, Mom, I'm fighting so that we don't have to fight over here on this country, so that you and my sisters and brothers aren't going to be, you know, like he has a strong belief in this nation and a belief that only in America could he, a kid who was adopted, be adopted into a family that, you know, loved him and cared for him and that my family, there was, you know, a lot of hardship in my childhood. And he's like, only in America could this have become a story. So I owe America. I, of course, corrected him and said, no, you owe me. You do not owe America anything. But thank you for thinking of it.
Yeah. This is Parker.
This is Parker.
This, I remember you talking about Parker on the Rosie O'Donnell show. I can't believe he's so old now.
But I want to ask you, so we always start off with like the elevator pitch about your family.
Yes.
So it's like that, like explain your family. I mean, I don't know who doesn't know your family, but like, you know, give us the whole, like how you made your little non-traditional family.
Well, I always knew I would adopt. I had a teacher in seventh grade, math teacher, who really loved me and helped me through the death of my mom, who, which had happened 2 years before. And she was 27. I was 13. And she was so unbelievably maternal and kind. And there was an incident where I ran away from school because one of the teachers, it was a junior high, and everyone in the elementary school understood that my mother had died, but there were four schools that merged into the junior high. And these teachers didn't know, and this poor guy, Mr. Kaplan, was like, where's your mother? What's your mother's phone number? I'm going to call that. And I was like, and then all the kids in the class who knew started buzzing, and so I ran out of the class, out of the school, and hid in the woods, like till it got dark.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was kind of trippy and intense. So I didn't go back to school for like a week or two.
Oh my God, I was like,
I'm not going. I'm just not going. And then the teacher, the principal came to my house. And so when I got back, she took a special interest and she had me in her math class, which was not my strength. and really did love me back to life. So she's the woman that I have a school in New York City, and the school is named after her, and her children are my godchildren, and they have children now. So she always taught me that you didn't need blood to have a family, because took me in and made me part of her family, and you know, first person to hug me. I was one of those kids, didn't know where to put my arms, you know, one of those awkward little
She taught you how to hug.
She did. She taught me how to give someone.
It's a skill.
It is. And then I've been told I'm a good hugger. I don't want to brag.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe it.
We're hugging you before we leave.
I'm all encompassing of my hugging, right? People are like, you're an over hugger. I'm like, I've heard other bad things about me. But
it's one of my mom's biggest thing. You got to be a good hugger.
Yeah.
If she meets you and you're not a good hugger, it's a problem.
It's a problem.
It's a problem. There's something wrong with you if you're not a good hugger.
So I knew that I was going to have adopted kids. I didn't know. I knew a lot of kids. I wanted like 10, truthfully. Mm-hmm. And then I had I adopted my first son when I was 33. And I had already achieved a level of success that gave me financial freedom. Mm-hmm. And I knew I needed that because I knew I was going to need help. And so I adopted Parker, and then 2 years later, I adopted Chelsea. And that was a very conflicted and sort of troubled adoption. Everything that could go wrong went wrong.
Really?
With Parker's adoption, it was easy as can be.
Now, you did this as a single mother?
With the first two babies, I was single.
And what went wrong with Chelsea?
The lawyer, which I didn't know, who Martin Short had recommended, had lost his license in the interim between when Martin Short adopted a baby years ago and when I called him. But he didn't let me know that. So he
feels
had,
like an important detail.
But he had a couple, and he said they were college kids and that they were pregnant and they were just really ready to, and it was all a lie. And there was, you know, tremendous amount of mental illness and, you know, criminal behavior. And there was just, it was like a sad gene pool to go fishing in, you know. And Chelsea, we found out when she was 16, had a stroke in utero.
Because
the mother was a drug user.
We talked to a couple who had a foster child.
A foster child,
They learned had a stroke in utero. It took a lot of work for them to get that information figured out.
It took so long for us. Since she was 12, she's been sort of under really intensive medical treatment to try to help her, you know, figure out a way to relate to other people. But they wanted to give her Alzheimer's drugs to make synapses across the hole where the stroke was. And it's just been very tragic. Now she has a baby. She's living in Wisconsin. Hopefully, you know, she's going to get on the right track kind of soon. But that was a difficult adoption. And then I met Kelly. Mm-hmm. And then I adopted a third. She wasn't so thrilled about that.
Kelly or Chelsea?
Kelly.
Right.
Like said, I only wanted to have one kid and travel the world. And I already had two. Oh. And then I was adopting a third one without really consulting too much.
Oh, you just did it on your own.
Well, yeah. I just
was. How long were you in the relationship? Was it early days?
It was probably two years in.
And then so you just brought a kid home.
I just said, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And you know, literally, if this was a show about how to ruin a marriage, I would have like 3 hours of stuff that I, you know, I always put the kids first above the relationship. I don't recommend you do that either.
No.
But that's what I did. And I always knew I would have a lot of babies. And so then we adopted Blake and everything was great. And then I wanted to adopt another baby. And she was like, I'm going to have the baby. And I didn't care where the baby came from, really. Right. It wasn't like invested.
So you're still a non-bio mom either way.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Vivi tells everyone, they say, you're not adopted because Kelly gave birth to you. She's like, well, my other mom had to adopt me. So I'm
You did second parent adoption?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm half adopted, she says.
Because she wants to be like her siblings.
Correct. And it's odd to be half adopted when you look so much like your bio mother who's in the picture. Yeah,
they look
kind
of identical,
they
right?
They look alike, yeah. Especially when they were little, like pictures of Kelly at that age. So then Kelly and I got divorced, and then I got remarried to a woman who got sick with cancer after a year and became dependent on the pain meds. It was very sad, and we separated, and she gave up her rights to we adopted another baby. So what had happened was I had had a heart attack when I was 50. She had had this cancer, and I got a call from the lawyer who got me Parker, who said, I have a birth mother who doesn't want a dad in the picture. And if you know anyone, let me know if there are two women that. And so I was like, hold on a second. Now, my wife, my ex-wife, who's now sadly died.
Yeah.
Her own life is very tragic after she had moved to Florida, got remarried, and adopted another baby.
Oh.
Yeah. So it was a highly tragic situation. But she had, I got distracted myself by the sadness.
You were going by the sadness. Right. You were going.
You had a heart attack. She had
cancer. And then on the way home from Lois Smith's funeral, who was a legendary publicist, someone came over to me and said, I'm adopting with the same lawyer you used for Parker. And I'm like, no, he had a brain tumor. He's out of the business. It's someone lying to you. She goes, no, here's his number. So on the way home, I called him up. Now, in the meantime, I think that Michelle got sick from the in vitro fertilization. She had this rare thing called desmoid tumors, which is a gelatinous mass inside your mesentery, which is the coating that the net coating that holds in all your organs.
Yeah.
So she had trouble going to the bathroom, and they did. And it's this very rare form of cancer that is scary.
So she went through in vitro.
She went through in vitro before I met her.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And then when I met her, she did it twice. It didn't work. During the year, we were together 1 year before she got sick. And we broke up. And so I kept Dakota, my daughter, because she had moved on and moved.
And this is the one, this is the daughter that came from the lawyer who called you saying, I have a birth mother who doesn't want a father and a dad.
Right, and this is the only one of my five adopted children that was an open adoption.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because they were not doing open adoptions as much when you were first adopting, right?
They weren't doing it at all.
Yeah.
And I mean, my friend Christine Ebersole adopted babies, open adoption at the same time. And I remember thinking, how could you do that?
Right. Yeah.
What if they, you know, kind of freak out? And what if they, and she's like, no, it's all fine. And she's one of those kind of ethereal.
She seems like that.
She's
actually.
Like that. She's very, and
it's nice to hear she is actually like that.
She is like that. And so when this baby came up, I said, when they told me the situation, I said, well, you have to tell her that it's me. Tell her she'd have to sign a clause that said she wouldn't talk about it to the tabloids. And would she want to do it, knowing that I'm 50 and that I had a heart attack and that my wife had this horrible cancer? And she did. This was the first baby that she placed, and then afterwards placed two or three more.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the light of my life, this little thing.
I'm sure.
She was tested for autism and given a diagnosis of autism at 3.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And she's highly, highly verbal.
Mm-hmm.
But she has, you know, some of the social interaction problems and, you know, some of the obsessive stuff. Like, she will do anything for Minecraft.
Oh, my God. Is she my son?
How old?
Henry? 8.
Yeah, she's
Minecraft
six.
And now Fortnite, but Minecraft, he like builds games in the server and all that jazz.
In the creative. She goes into creative too. Or she plays this game called Fashion Frenzy, where you have to dress yourself up based on the category, and then you vote for the other people. And she plays this game, but she can't read. So I have to play the game with her.
Of course,
she's like, Mom, they're randomizing the clothing! I'm like, I'm coming!
Well, like, it seems like, I mean, it's one thing to like read little snippets about what you went through, but to hear you tell it beginning to end, like, that's a lot.
That's a lot.
Like, how did it play out for all the kids and for the family? Because it's the family structure has
morphed so many times.
Yeah. You know, I was one of the people who believed I would never be divorced. Like, I thought it was no one in my family had been divorced.
Mm-hmm. Robin and I were just talking about this.
Yeah.
How you can never be too sure.
Right.
You know, you think you won't.
Right.
But how do you really know?
No, and I, you know, my mother died when I was 10. It was such a shock to the system, and everything got unearthed at that age. And so here we were breaking up when the kids were in that age range. And, you know, in the end, I think they all decided, and when we talk about it, they're like, it's better this way.
So timeline-wise, because in my brain, I think of you, the Rosie O'Donnell, like, this is my timeline for you. There's the Rosie O'Donnell show. Well, there's a League of Their Own.
Is it nice to have other people say your life back to you? Okay, go ahead, Jamie.
Ooh, speaking of a League of Their Own, my preparation for coming here was just going to be to just watch a League of Their Own a million more times because it's such a good film.
It's on all the time.
It's classic.
It's such a great
I feel like
movie.
It's making a comeback because this Halloween at my
dog. There were a lot of kids.
Did you see?
Yeah.
There were all these Peaches. What were they called? The
Georgia Peaches. I was going to say Georgia Peaches, but that's not right.
Yeah. All these little girls dressed up. I feel like there needs to be, you can't really do a sequel of that movie, can you?
Well, you know, they're doing a new with one of the girls from Broad Street.
Broad City.
She is doing another version of kind of League of Their Own, but with gay.
Ooh.
Because Penny was very adverse to the gay stuff.
Really?
Yes.
Penny wasn't gay?
No. Isn't that shocking?
It is kind of shocking.
I bet she had a couple of flings. No?
I don't think so, because she was really kind of thrown by the concept. And, you know, when I had that big scene where I say, you know, before I came here, I felt like a weird girl and not even a girl, but I think we're all right.
That
is so a coming out scene.
Like, totally.
And so I did it the first time. She goes, cut, Rosie, this is not about anything gay. What are you doing? I'm like, this is about her being gay.
This really is
about Doris Murphy coming to understand that she has people her own age.
Yes.
And
like her.
And that she's not alone. She's not, you know, so we did it like four times. And every time I'd say, okay, I understand. I do it the same way. Because
this is how it's done. Moxie.
Well, that was what I was doing in my character. Yeah. So that's what I was playing the whole time. So to all of a sudden like do that like it was a nothing scene.
Yeah.
You know, but
and that's like one of the most powerful scenes in it. You couldn't not do it that way.
Yeah, that's what I felt.
Yeah.
But she, you know, was great. And it's so sad that we lost her. So,
to this day, we still walk around and go, Marla Hooch, what a hitter. Like, that is just like, and that like giant shot of her so far away. It's just like, that movie was just everything.
That's such a good movie.
It was a good movie.
Female, powerful. Yeah.
Yes.
Hey, Robin, you know what us two mom families spend the most money on in an average year?
No, therapy, boots, I don't know. No,
feminine care products.
Oh, I get it. Yeah. Twice the tampons.
Yeah,
I got it.
Yeah, exactly. But I have the company for all our two mom families out there. L. That's the letter L. It's a period and personal care company that is focused on giving you organic period care products without the organic prices.
Oh, I love the organic thing. Mm-hmm. And I also love the non-organic prices that are attached
to it. Totally. But Elle makes tampons, pads, and liners with organic cotton because they believe a natural product just makes sense for a natural process.
Sure.
So there's no pesticides, chlorine, fragrances, there's no dyes, nothing.
I actually use Elle now.
Me too.
And I love their products. But you know what I love most about the company is that for every Elle product that you purchase, one is made accessible to a woman or a girl who needs it. So to date, they've made over 200 million products accessible and counting.
Wow.
So when you get Elle, you're part of helping that movement grow.
That is really so good. Did you know that there are girls missing school all around the world just because they can't get period products?
What
kind of backwards shit is that?
I know.
I feel good knowing I'm using a product from a company who's giving back to the world. It's to the girls. Let's take care of our girls.
Let's slow your roll. We know that you care. But listen, I also love that they're easy to get.
Yeah.
And you can find Elle by going to your local Target. Honestly, it's the best looking package on the shelf. You just look for a clear canister with a gold lid or white bags with a large gold circle on the front.
Or you can get your Elle organic tampons, pads, and liners right now by going to thisisl.com/OCT. That's thisisl.com/OCT.
So that's the word this is and the letter L.com/OCT.
Take care of our girls.
Jamie.
So timeline wise, because in my brain, I think of you like this is my timeline for you. There's the Rosie O'Donnell show. Well, there's a League of Their
Own. Is it nice to have other people say your life back to you?
Yeah.
Like
this?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Jamie.
Because in my head, during the Rosie O'Donnell show is when you had Parker and Chelsea. Because I remember you talking about them. And I think I knew you were gay. You weren't out then?
Not really, but everybody kind of knew.
Because I remember watching it and thinking, I just love that she's talking about her kids and she's gay. Like, you were like the first one to do this.
Yeah. You were a trailblazer family. And I do have to just tell you that when we started this podcast, we have about a neighborhood of like 400 Google Docs of like things we're doing and, you know, whatever. And that we were like, people were going after. And the very first name that we wrote in was you.
Yeah.
Well, when I heard it was a gay family planning podcast, I was like, I'm in.
I love that.
I made my gay family in a way that people don't as much, you know, I don't see anyone with a big posse like, you know, of kids like I do anymore.
You do have a posse.
I have a posse.
You made a posse.
I did. And most people I know are having babies within their unions, and it's still very difficult if you're
wanting to adopt. You know,
it's expensive, yes.
We talk about that. We had a very easy go of it. Like, I got pregnant pretty easily. They just put it in there, you know, it happened. We still paid about $6,000 a kid. Like, that's a lot of money just to have a baby.
Yeah, that's a lot cheaper than adopting.
Adoption is very expensive.
Yes.
And there are so many unknowns when it comes to adoption.
Yeah, and that's scary. You know, when you're young, you think that love can cure anything.
Right. But, no.
You know, when you adopt babies and, you know, you don't know where, like a plant comes up from your garden and you have no idea what this plant is and whether or not it can survive in this location and how to care for this kind of plant.
Right.
And if they were with, you know, their birth family, all those kinds of plants, people know, well, oh, this is how we live. This is how we, you know, so it's interesting to see one kid pop up as like a daisy and the other kid pop up as, you know, some kind of other flower that you're either familiar with or you're not.
Yeah.
But it's a lot scarier now for me than it was when I was 30 and, you know, 33, I adopted Parker and I was so excited and
Naive.
Yes, I think there's a real falsehood that's told about adoption, that it all, you know, once you adopt, the kids are yours forever and there's no bumps.
Right.
No, you're taking the bumpy road.
You think it's more bumpy than having a baby on your own?
Yes. Because of the primal wound that the baby feels from being separated from their mother, there's wonderful research where they did with chimpanzees where they take the chimp away from the mother and they see what effect it has, even being raised by a different mother within their area, their zoo or their jungle, whatever. But it was a very profound thing that they had even a metal mother with just milk, but no loving, no cuddling. And then they had another mother who raised as if it was their own. But I think it's a bigger challenge in some ways when you adopt.
Yeah. We had like a lady who talked about that. She talked about like that, that there was a separation that you, no matter what, there's a feeling of loss you have to deal with.
Yes, there's like a primal wound. And at some point, each of the younger ones now, Dakota hasn't done it yet, but the younger ones like said to me at 7, you know, why didn't my mother want me? And, you know, I always say to them, well, look at a baby. Let's look at a baby. We'd be at the mall or something and see that baby. Do you know anything about that baby? No. Right. That's just a baby. But you know about the mommy. The mommy wasn't ready to be a mommy, so God looked inside her tummy and figured out there was a mix-up, and he knew he had to get you to your right mommy. And he's like, and that's why we're a good match. I'm like, that's right. That's why we're
That's such a great
match.
Answer.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that just popped in my head one day.
But these are the things you have to think about. As an adoptive parent, as an LGBTQ parent, we have to have all these kinds of conversations all the time. We have to have the stories. We have to know what we're going to say about the fact that, no, you don't have a dad. You have a donor. You know, you have to have...
Yeah.
You have to have the narrative figured out and ready to go.
It's interesting because we have that with Vivi, because Vivi had a donor that we knew.
It was someone you knew.
Yes. I was too afraid of the donor.
The banks. Yeah.
I don't know why. I just was. But so she had a donor that she knew, and Vivi is now very interested. And, you know, we haven't had that. Like, none of the other kids.
Does she know who the donor is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
She knows. She hasn't met him, but she knows who he is, and she's, like, seen his Facebook, you know. But Chelsea, when she was 16, went to find her birth parents.
Oh.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a tragedy, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Her mother showed up with cameras and sold these stuff, too.
Oh, because you're Rosie O'Donnell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Chelsea was talked about on TV for a while.
And told everyone I tried to kill her with a wine bottle, chasing her around the house. And I'm like, everyone knows I don't run.
Yeah.
So that was a lie, okay? I might have, like, trudged towards you slowly.
Also that you wouldn't waste the wine.
That's exactly right. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But she left out the conversation. Oh, I came home from a Harlem apartment of a guy who was just learning to give tattoos.
Oh, that's a good plan.
Oh, honey, thank you for telling me that.
That's a good plan. Yeah. Okay, so timeline. We keep getting distracted. So Parker and Chelsea were during the Rosie O'Donnell show. And then Vivian's the next one?
The next is Blake.
Blake, with Kelly.
Still, he was one when I left the show.
Okay, I think I actually remember that there was
a baby. I carried him in the last episode.
I think I remember that.
And then we gave birth to Vivi.
Right.
Kelly gave birth to Vivi.
With the known donor.
With the known donor. Mm-hmm. And that was when I was 40.
Okay, was that IUI, IVF?
It was at home. We
turkey baster.
Yeah, guy came over one time. It was on March 17th, the day my mother died.
Oh.
That was the day that it happened to be coinciding with her.
A magical.
Her business.
Her ovulation stuff. Mm-hmm. So I put it in. Wow. He left it in the bathroom. I put it in, and it took in one day.
That's romantic. Wow. That's
right.
So,
they said it was 4% chance that like, that would happen.
That's the dream.
We lived the dream.
You sure did.
And then we got this beautiful little baby, Vivi, who was just adorable and smart and great. And she's so neurotypical. You know both the parents. There's no hardship. When people are adopting out their children, they're usually in crisis. Mm-hmm. And that's something that adoptive parents have to know. And with crisis comes what? You know, mental instability and untreated health issues. And so it's a challenge, I think, in some ways. You don't have all the information that you want. And when you're adopting, sometimes you don't get all the facts purposefully.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day.
Yeah.
I think nowadays it's a lot easier. So with Dakota, with the open adoption, it was, you know, something I had never even imagined.
And you were in contact with the mother before, while she was pregnant?
Well, for the last 2 months. Uh-huh. So I found out in like November, I think Lois died. And then by January 7th, we had a baby.
I just realized too, you have like the inverse of most people, like all of your kids except one are adopted. Like that's sort of like the inverse.
Right,
like
exactly.
One, you know, I wonder, was that hard for her or for
Abby?
Well,
so I would say she likes to feel she's adopted. She tells everyone that I'm adopted.
That's just such a funny thing. It's like, I'm adopted. You don't like take it as a badge of, you know,
right,
you know, honor.
Exactly. To be, you know, I always felt after I adopted Parker that if I had had a baby that I didn't want people to say, oh, that's the real one.
Yeah.
Oh, right. The real baby.
I felt very concerned about not doing genes at all once I had adopted him because I didn't want anyone to feel that they weren't part of the family.
Well, did your older kids have any issues with the fact that your wife carried a baby and there were genes involved with that one?
No.
I can't imagine a world where you didn't make it completely.
I mean, it's very exciting to get a sibling.
Well, I can tell you this, that I don't know what it's like to carry a baby and give birth to a baby. So I don't know what that's like. Kelly knows what that's like. And it creates, I think, a connection that is hard to articulate, but that is there. That's obvious.
Right.
You know?
Did you ever feel jealous about not carrying or having your genes involved? And
I never wanted my genes involved. There's a lot of craziness in my family, and my mother died very young, breast cancer. You know, my dad's family, all alcoholics, all heart disease, all, I don't know, I never felt, and my sister and brother get mad, I hope they're not listening, but they get mad at this when I say that, because that's implying like, oh, so my kids are our
genes. Right.
But I'm not like saying, I'm just saying for me, me with my life experience with Pat Maravel, and finding a family that wasn't biologically mine, but fitting in there and feeling love and all the things that make life full of joy. It was the right path for me. So I never really felt jealous. I never felt that I wanted to experience that.
Hey, Robin, you know what?
What?
My dad used to tell the most amazing stories about his life. Aww. He had a pretty crazy life. And he was like really entertaining with his stories. And he always said he was going to write them down. But he never got the chance. Mm-hmm. No. And so now we're stuck with my regurgitated retellings of his story. And I have the worst memory.
It's not funny.
It's not working. So I've decided I am not going to let that happen again with the rest of my family. Everyone is getting Storyworth for Christmas this year.
Oh, I love Storyworth. I gave it to my sister last year.
They did?
It's been like a really great tool to help us all stay connected since we're all so far away from each other. Basically, Storyworth is an online service that helps your loved ones tell the story of their lives through thought-provoking questions about their memories and personal thoughts.
Yeah, so every week, Storyworth emails your family member different story prompts, like questions that you've never thought to ask, like, what have been some of your life's greatest surprises and what's one of the riskiest things you've ever done?
That's a good question.
That's a good one. And then they can write as much or as little as they want. They can add pictures and they can really just make it their own.
Yeah, and after a year, Storyworth will compile every answer, question, and every photo that you choose to include into this beautiful keepsake book that's shipped to you for free.
I love it. You never know what family history Storyworth will uncover.
Yeah,
truly.
I had no idea that my sister... No, I probably shouldn't tell that story. It's a little dirty.
I think I need a copy of the
book.
Yeah,
totally.
You can add and you can give it to as many people as you want. Okay. Well, I'm excited for this. I think we should all preserve and pass on memories with Storyworth, the most meaningful gift for your family. You can sign up today by going to storyworth.com/OCT and you'll get $20 off your first purchase.
That's storyworth.com/OCT for $20 off.
Do it.
And your sister might tell inappropriate stories too.
I never thought about that. Do you know that? Like, someone asked me once, well, you're robbing this kid of a father.
Right.
I was like, never entered my mind.
It never entered mine either. I was never, I wasn't that close with my dad growing up. So I didn't think, I was always like, this, my mom was my world. My dad, take it or leave him.
Well,
so I just figured they'd be
family,
the same.
I thought, well, what?
What's the difference? Not,
what, you know, I don't know. I didn't enter my mind.
Until somebody
you're much more compassionate
you.
Person, right? When they asked me, I was completely dumbfounded, too. Yeah. What? No.
Did it ever come up with your kids? Did any of them ever
Parker
have feelings?
Parker said, when I wish I had a daddy, I said, I know a daddy would be great. What do you think you'd like to do as daddy, with a daddy? He goes, well, I don't know, like play catch with the mitts and stuff. I go, well, you are lucky because mommy is one of the really good baseball players around. And let's go outside. We went and bought the mitts. We went, we threw for literally
20 minutes.
20 minutes at the most. And then he's like, okay, you know what? It wasn't that great. I was like, okay. And he goes, I guess I'll just keep you. I said, okay.
Because I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, when we were on the beach with Kelly's family when he was very young, he said, you know, some people were talking down by making the sandcastles about it's wrong to have two mommies and not a daddy and a mommy. I said, yeah, well, what did that make you feel, you know? And he said, it made me feel bad that I don't have a daddy. And what do we do about them? I go, there are some people like that's how they feel. He goes, I think I'm one of those people. He was 7 years old. And I was like, wow. I said, well, that's something you're going to have to think about, honey, because if you had a mommy and a daddy, then you wouldn't have me, because I'm the kind of mommy that wants another mommy. And that's when he really thought about it and said, okay, I'll just keep you. You know, I was like, thank the Lord. I could imagine what was coming next, you know. Then I was so angry at Kelly's family that they're
amidst that Southern Baptist craziness,
you know.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You can't control what they hear.
It was so weird of a time where you couldn't really say you were gay, but when you have a child, you out yourself because you go to the parents' school, even the pre-K, and this is your partner.
Constantly.
And I remember when Parker was a baby and I was on TV and the nanny would say, he would tell people at the park, oh, my mommy and my other mommy. And Geraldine would be like, don't say that, Parker. You can't be saying that. I'm like, don't tell him. That he can't talk about his own life. Well, you're on the show. We don't want people to know. I'm like, well.
You got to be able to pay me.
You got to still be able to pay me.
Interesting.
Was that, can we talk a little bit about what it was like to be out during that time? Because nobody was out at that time. Like, I mean,
well,
at
I
that
wasn't
level,
really out.
You weren't
out
publicly.
No, but I would, like,
but
Kelly would
hiding
sit next.
It.
Exactly. Kelly would sit next to me at every award show. I would go with her. I would, you know, I don't know, but it was. Lying but by omission in a way, because at that time nobody thought anyone could be out and be on TV.
I was gonna say, was the network ever like, just keep that to yourself?
No, because when I started, before I took the job, I said, I want you to know I'm gay, at a table full of all executives. And I don't imagine that I'll ever want to talk about it, because it's not like the biggest thing in my life. But I would much rather help children who are in crisis than I would to use them my, you know, gay mantra or whatever. I just felt really pulled to children who were in crisis, because that was the hardest time in my life. It wasn't the realization of my gayness. That was so, you know, that was kind of okay, but I didn't like wrestle with it like people did. Also because I didn't have a mother to disappoint. Everyone says you don't want to look in your mother's eyes and see disappointment, you know?
Yeah.
And I never had that. So I told my sister and my brother, you know, when I was a freshman in college, I was like, I think I'm in love with Chrissy Salucci.
You always remember
this first. Where's Chrissy Salucci now?
And she's in Norway. And I just looked her up last weekend on Facebook.
Funny. And did we find her?
I found her.
And did you talk to her?
Well, no, I sent her an
email. You know, she still talks about you. She's like, I went to college with Rosie O'Donnell.
And we played Scratch My Back in the
Twin
Bay.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, I bet you did.
Yeah, you did.
I bet
you did. That's all we did, because I was still like a little like, what do you do with this?
This
is all too much.
It's like, you can kind of see what the beginning of it is, but maybe not the next steps after that.
Yes.
Like, I kind of want to hang out with you a lot, maybe make out a little bit, but then after that, what happens?
Yeah, yeah. Right. And then
I mean,
you
we all went
out
through
what
that.
Happens.
Yeah, a little bit.
And then you get to be my age and you're like, eh, who cares?
Yeah.
honey, let's cuddle.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Or you have kids and same thing. Same,
yeah,
same. You
just, same thing.
But I still think it was really brave because, like, yes, at that time, like, in the entertainment industry, like you said, people were not giving out shows to people. They were not, like, the fact that even before the show started, you sat in a room of executives and you were willing to, like, let it go if they were like...
Well, I wanted to make sure that they weren't going to be anti-gay in case I was outed.
To tell you to zip it up.
Or... Right. And I'm like, before you spend this money, because it cost a lot of money to launch a show, I want you to know that. And, you know, you can decide when I'm not here what that means for you and your life. But... And then while I was on my show, Ellen's show was on and there was a big thing that she was going to come out as a lesbian. And I remember thinking, well, her career's over.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Whoever was that brave to do that.
Yeah.
And then I was asked all these questions about it, you know, when I'd be walking on a red carpet or what do you think about Ellen? And I was like, oh, what can I say? You know, how do I do that? But when she came on my show, I tried to like stand by her in a lesbian sisterly way.
Yeah.
And when she said, you know, oh, I'm Lebanese. I'm like, maybe I'm Lebanese too.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. I forgot about that.
That's an iconic
that was such
moment.
A big,
yeah, because I didn't want her out there alone. You know, that Tori Amos song, your mom shows up in a nasty dress and it's your turn now to stand where I stand. Everyone's looking at you. Grab hold of my hand.
Yes.
But I can't hear them.
You have to sing it so I can hack it.
What if I'm a mermaid in those jeans of hers with her name still on it? And I don't care because sometimes I said sometimes I hear my voice and it's been here silent all these years.
Yeah.
There we go. Who knew you were a Tori Amos fan?
I mean, who isn't?
I am.
I mean, Lonnie DeFranco, Tori. Ani, I mean, it's like all those times.
All the lesbian music.
Yeah, love it.
Love that lesbian music. So, okay, so you weren't publicly out during the show.
And then I was leaving the show and I wrote a book called Find Me.
Right.
About my life and about an adoption agency that I had and what of the specific cases that I got involved with. Of all the cases, hundreds of cases of people calling for information about adoption and placement of children, this one just sort of caught my eye. And it turned out to be a woman with dissociative identity disorder. And so that book came out, and in that book was just the reference of just mentioning Kelly and just talking about, right, it wasn't like a big...
outing.
Announcement. But what happened was 9/11 happened right before the book came out. And I felt so bad publicizing it. It felt like in this world, right? You're going to sit there.
Like, and my book.
And let me talk to you about my sad childhood as we see people jumping out of the buildings, right?
Yeah.
I felt like the timing was really awful about that. And then I wrote another book, Celebrity Detox. But by that time I was out. So after my show, you know, I had never shown my kids on TV. Mm-hmm. And after 9/11, that day I did. I just felt like you never know when the world's going to take away everything that you love. And you better, you know, claim your love for who you do. Mm-hmm. So I remember I showed them on that. And that was like a big turning point in my life. But I didn't know how to sort of live with it. I went on stage sometimes doing stand-up, and I'd try to bring it up, or I'd try to bring it up with John McDaniel, who was also gay. And we both kind of didn't know the language of how you talk about being gay in a society in 1996 when nobody was talking about it.
They really weren't.
Things have come a long way.
I mean, it's we talk a lot about what it's like for the kids, but I feel like for your kids, it's... I mean, you're so famous that it's like you being gay is just like a drop in the hat. Like you're Rosie O'Donnell, you know? So I don't know. Did it impact them? Or?
They're much more like affected by the Trump stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're much more affected by, you know, like my daughter will say, Mom, did you have to say what you I saw it on the news? I'm like, honey, this is a time where everybody is going to be asked what they did to try to fight this forge and this man.
You'd be proud of me one day.
Right. Yeah. This is pre-Germany Hitler, and everyone needs to be awake and on their toes, you know? And those with the microphone have a duty to speak to it, I think, you know?
What do you think about, like, LGBTQ families and where we are with the administration and where things are right now?
Well, this administration, you can't look at it for anything.
No.
You can't look to it for any policy. You know, all it is sort of hatred and bigotry and prejudice, you know?
Ugliness.
And when they're able to violate the civil rights of people who are in the armed forces who are trans and they're able to say, we don't want you back after serving or we want to strip you of you. I mean, it's really unbelievable.
Yeah.
And this was a guy who was not particularly anti-gay before he got in there.
Yeah, he kind of just, he goes with whatever current he feels is going to be the big winner or the big, he has no kind of standing ground morals in any shape
it's
or
form. It's just about staying in power for him, it seems like.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know what's going to happen when he gets impeached and then.
You know, he doesn't go down without a fight. I mean, we saw it on The View when you were on The View and you guys had that feud.
Yeah.
That was my first notice of how crazy that man is, honestly.
Mine too.
You unearthed something.
Well, I told the truth, and that's the thing that gets him the most.
Yeah, you know? Because he doesn't ever.
Well, and what I looked up on Wikipedia, all was available at my fingertips. It wasn't like I had to do Ronan Farrow investigative journalism to find out these facts about. It was available to any single reporter from the moment he went down those escalator steps and condemned Mexicans as rapists. Mm-hmm. That was the beginning of the end. And so when I said what I said, it was quite a shock to him. And the vengeance with which he retaliated was like a decade long.
Yeah. No, I know. It's still, I mean, it's still going.
Still going at the debates, remember?
I feel like the only good thing we can say is that he's stopped attacking you because he's attacking everyone else.
Exactly.
Like
that's
gotta be. He'll still find ways to do it. He'll still
slip
you in.
Well, at the debate, he did. At the debate, when they said, you know, you whatever, you called women cows and pigs and dogs and horrible. And he goes, nope, only Rosie O'Donnell.
And
the part about that that's hurtful was the laughter in the audience. It's like he has the ability to change the public perception of whoever he wants.
Yeah.
He can take Bill Taylor today, ambassador, and diminish him and deride him and 50 years of public service, right? Any person that goes against him.
He fabricates.
Yeah. He lies and lies and lies. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting to be affiliated or connected with the most evil man that's ever held the office. Mm-hmm. Like, I think, how did this get to be my life?
To be one of his main targets, really.
Really. And to be the first one that called him out. You know?
Yes.
To be the original whistleblower of Trump.
There you go.
Right?
That's something to take right down in the books.
Yeah. But what? But it, what is, you know, he ha- I don't really know much that he's done for gay families or even talked about them or even.
No.
Well, he wrapped himself in a rainbow flag during the election.
He did. He's letting Pence, but it doesn't matter what his beliefs, what anything, he's going to go with what Pence wants, and what Pence wants is to get rid of
us all. I think it's about the base. I think he thinks the people that can keep him in office believe the stuff.
Yeah.
And so he's just I'm going to give you that.
But that base is not as big as he thinks it is.
I hope not.
That's what I believe. You know, when I used to get some hate mail and you'd be like, oh my God, what? You said something about Cubans and you'd get all this hate mail. You find out it's from one computer in Philadelphia, right? Remember when we would go through that? I was like, oh no, we're under attack. No, you're not. It's one guy sitting in his house. Like, you know, so I don't think that it's as big as, I think that the real American spirit is going to come up and.
I hope you're right.
I have to believe it because the level of depression that I went through when he was elected, my therapist said to me the day before, I said, you know, I'm going to do this new pilot for this Showtime series and I'm going to be alone on election night. Do you think I should be worried?
Yes.
Rosie, you know, Rosie, we've always talked about your negative cycling. You keep negatively recycling all of the... No one thinks she's going to win, Rosie. Oh. No one.
Nobody
I called
did.
Her up that night, you motherfucker. Oh.
Is she still your therapist?
No, she moved. Thank God.
Oh my God.
But
hilarious.
Now I have a good one, so I'm good. I'm in good hands.
All right. Oh well, that's good. Happy for you.
And
there.
She's gay.
Oh, good. Oh,
yeah. And she
love the gays.
Are we all so happy? We're always like, yeah.
I know. And so it's like, look how nice.
It's a sisterhood.
We have to tell our listeners that when we walk in, Rosie was like, so are you all lesbians? We were like, yes.
Which I like. You know, it's
thank
nice.
God. I'm so
wouldn't
great.
It be funny to have a gay family
and
show
and
nobody's gay?
That'd be a problem.
Hey, Jamie, did you know that we're in the middle of engagement season right now?
That's a thing?
No, it is.
Oh, wait. You know what? Anne and I got engaged in December, right before Christmas. So
oh my God,
just, it is a thing.
Right? Just think about how far we've come with gay marriages since they were legalized.
Totally.
You feel so taboo.
Oh my God, yeah. For a lot of our friends who came, it was like their first gay wedding. And now they're like everywhere.
Everybody's doing it.
But I remember how scared I was to get gay married in front of all my friends. It was like coming out all over again. It's scary.
Well, the good news, I can't help your fear, but I can tell you that Zola is here to make gay weddings easier.
Oh.
Zola makes wedding planning easier and less stressful with wedding websites, registries, invites, and a guest list manager, and it's all in one place.
Dang, having that would have made my life so much less stressful when planning this wedding.
Well, I mean, Zola's taken away the stress. They've got free wedding website designs. Oh, I'm used to make Mary do mine, but that would have been a lot easier. Poor Mary. Totally. You can create your site in just minutes, and they've got hundreds of gorgeous designs. Oh, and your guests can RSVP right on your page, and they can shop for your registry right on that site. Oh,
you know, speaking of registries, they have the highest rated registry of all time. Mm-hmm. You're not just limited to gifts on Zola. You can also register for experiences and honeymoon funds.
Get that money.
Amazing. Get that money. And they offer all the benefits you and your guests could possibly want in a registry. It's really great.
Oh, and plus, they offer beautiful, affordable invites in paper. Mm. You can just get it all there. You
Everything
can save
there.
The dates, invites, thank yous. And they're going to help you collect your addresses and track online Love RSVPs it. With their free guest list manager.
I have the hardest time tracking guests.
Oh my God, I can't track anything.
Zola has helped 1 million couples get married, and they will help you too.
So sign up at zola.com/OCT today, and you can use our promo code Paper30 to get 30% off your invites and paper order.
That's zola.com/OCT and promo code Paper30. That's P-A-P-E-R 30.
Do it.
Do it.
Or is there anything you want to tell our listeners that they should be, you know, like advocating for or working?
Well, the foster care system is a mess and it needs to be burnt down and starting from the ground zero to rebuild the whole thing mm-hmm. so that there's more accountability. There are mm-hmm. 500,000 kids in foster care and only 300,000 licensed foster homes. So mm-hmm. that's 200,000 kids. And these are stats from years, you know, like a decade ago. So they're probably not accurately, but it's near this range where there are 200 kids with literally no place to go. And they just keep being moved around and then they age out. And the amount of death that and jail incarceration that happens to these kids is really shocking that the government gives you $1,000 if you're lucky in a state that they do that and good luck out
and
in the
set
world.
You on your way.
Yeah. And not have a home for Thanksgiving, not have a home for the rest of your life.
I mean, you foster ever?
Yes.
You did foster.
Yes. When Parker was 7, there was a girl in Miami who was brutally raped in a one-bedroom apartment in Little Havana. And it was on the local news and I couldn't get it out of my head. And knowing that they were the same age.
Yeah. She was 7.
She was 7. God. And the doctor came to our house because Parker was sick. And I said, by chance, what hospital are you in? And he said, the one that she was at. And I said, did you hear, you know, the girl who was raped? And he said, my college roommate is her doctor.
Mm.
And I was like, well, I would like to go visit her if it's possible. And, you know, my show was on at the time. So they, of course, arranged for me to get to this place where the kids were in protective custody. And I walked in and there was only one toddler bed. And so I knew who it was because there was only one little kid. The rest of them were teenagers. Mm-hmm. And I brought gifts for the, you know, little beanie babies and jewelry. And she was running around. I didn't even get to talk to her. And I was talking to the older girl saying, you know, when I was a kid, there was a chance I would have been in a place like this. And I want you to know when you see people on TV that could have been you, that can be you. And like they'd raise their hand and go, yeah, but do you know Ricky Martin? And I'd be like, okay.
He's gay.
Wait, yeah, he's gay. I would be like, I'm telling you, like, what, you know, my heart felt trying not to cry. You know, I would have been one of you kids. Do you think Drake is handsome? I'm like, oh, Jesus.
You're like, not really.
So she comes in the room, everyone is left, and she asks if there's a Beanie Baby, and she only speaks Spanish, and I only speak a little Spanish. So she wants to show me her room. So they were like, oh, I guess let her go. So they came with me, and we went to her room. And she said, see, I got this other Beanie Baby from my doctor. And I'm thinking, yeah, the one who stitched her up, right? And so I went and I would visit her like every month or so, trying to see if she was adoptable or what would happen. It turned out that the father came back into the picture and she ended up being reunited with the father who was not around when this event happened. But I went to court and I saw the mother. And one of the last days I went to visit her, there were two little kids sitting there, 3 and 5. Holding hands. Mm. And I was on my way out and I said, who are they? And they said, well, they're going into a mental hospital. I said, they're 3 and 5. And they said, well, the mother's schizophrenic and they're found naked on the beach and getting garbage. And so they failed out of 30 foster homes.
Oh my God.
And we're going to take them to a hospital right now. I said, okay, put them in my car. I'll take them. because I had had my foster care license. Yeah. I got it when I met that little girl, Cassandra.
Oh.
And so I took them home. Again, did not call Kelly.
Okay. I wonder what happened there.
I don't know, but we didn't seem to have the same.
It didn't make it.
No, it didn't make it. We had different agendas and ways of living in the world. And so I brought home these two kids, and the boy we kept for like 2 weeks, but he was so violent, and mostly to her.
Yeah. To the little sister
who, you know, and here they are. They can't imagine what they were living in. They come to my Star Island estate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the girl we kept for like 2.5 years. And then there was the lawsuit that gay people couldn't adopt in Florida.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so my friend's sister, who was married to a man, they adopted her, and she is now 21 years old.
Oh, okay.
And we still see her, and she's doing good.
Oh.
So it's
just do what you can.
Fostering you got to have thick skin with fostering.
You really do. But I think it's a challenge that I would take again.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Do you know what happened to the boy?
He went to a therapeutic foster home placement.
Okay.
Where he was the only child.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully that worked out.
Yeah. I can see when, you know, Dakota gets older, if there's not a baby around, you know, at first Parker was like, you're adopting a baby at 50 and you had a heart attack. I'm like, yes, I am.
Yes. But I was out at my therapist's through that heart attack. So.
Exactly. And then he said, you know, after the baby was like born, like 6 month old, he goes, you know, Mom, you're just happier with a baby around.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, it's so true. But, you know, you have to some point move on to the next phase of your life.
Right.
I keep grabbing backwards, you know, like till I was
that
your
you
age.
Do. I don't know that you do. Well, I just thank you so much for doing this with us. I mean,
this was so fun.
I mean, this was
our
amazing.
Listeners are going to be thrilled.
They're going to lose
their
mind.
I'm so glad.
Thrilled. We took some really creepy videos in the elevator of us getting really excited on the way up. So
you'll
see all those on the social media.
Excellent.
Of us acting really unprofessional and like, you know.
Well, thanks for having
me. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you
for coming.
Holy shit. Oh my God.
You're going to see on our social media feed all these videos of us after the interview just doing this. Because
oh
it was like,
and I'm still just doing that. Actually,
I mean, she is the pinnacle of the of people
Rosie
we wanted
O'Donnell.
To interview, and
she's a trailblazer.
And every once in a while, I would be sitting there, and then I would just look over and be like, oh, Rosie O'Donnell.
I'm talking to Rosie O'Donnell right now.
Right.
No, it's really fantastic, and she was great, and she was so open.
And just
Rosie, thank
sharing.
You for opening up, and just
and
you
for
know.
Just trailblazing and just doing it. Like, for all the things, just thank
important.
You. Important.
Like, she's an important person in our
she's a fucking icon.
Gay parenting journey and many other
the
journeys.
Part that I thought was really incredible was her saying that she told executives before, like they could have just said, we're not doing that show.
I know.
They could have very well been like, that's too risky. It was so risky then.
Yeah.
Forget about all the fanning.
She's ballsy.
Fangirling.
She's just ballsy as fuck.
Yeah. And just like, what an amazing person to just open her home and just constantly being like, I mean, I really do think that she would have had 47 kids.
If she might add more to
she's
the brood.
Probably still gonna.
But I also want to say that we've been in many people's houses to record, and that was by far the quietest.
I know.
Amazing.
It was quiet and delightful.
Yeah.
And we were in our house.
We were in Rosie O'Donnell's house.
That was big too.
So you should have seen us on the street. We got there so early. So we were just standing on the street. We do this every time we have to interview a celebrity.
Because we have good etiquette.
We want to be there on time, obviously. So when we get there early, we wait outside and just stand there like stalker people. And the doorman was watching us like,
taking videos. Because by the way, that we still can't stop ourselves from taking social media videos. Like, we're going up. Assholes.
I'm in shock. I'm in awe, and I feel fulfilled.
Oh, I love like leaving on a good word. I want to say like content and also like, I want to say hashtag blessed, but I want to punch myself in the face for saying it.
Say that.
It's not about the hashtag blessed. I feel like, I feel just so much like, Jamie, we have been working and we manifested this and I'm proud of
us. Well, listen, when we started this.
No, take that in. Take that in, Jamie. I'm proud of us.
I'm proud of us too. Should we touch?
No, stop it. I don't want to touch you.
All right. So
let's take a deep cleansing breath together. And then let's keep this conversation
going. Let's keep it going.
I want to say this.
Yeah.
Rosie O'Donnell started following us on Instagram.
She sure did.
If you're not following us on Instagram, something's wrong with you.
You better get on there.
Get on. And you can get us on Instagram at ovaries_talk on Insta.
On Twitter, ovaries talk. And if these ovaries could talk on the Facebook, the Book of the Face.
And we don't also forget.
We have a private community there in the Facebook.
Yeah.
It's called If These Ovaries Could Talk.
And you can also join our Patreon community, which is patreon.com/ovariestalk. And that's we're going to have all kinds of extra content. Mm-hmm. We're going to have like an extended conversation about Rosie and about what the experience was like on our Patreon.
We sure are, because we can't stop talking about it.
More than anyone wants to hear. All right, so, I mean.
That's going to be our grandkids. I know you met Rosie O'Donnell.
Shut up, Mom. It's going to be our kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And thank you to our sponsors. This is Elle, Storyworth, and Zola. Thanks for helping us make our show possible.
Thank you, guys. Seriously.
Thank you.
Okay. Anywho. I mean, I feel like let's exit. All right. Oh my God, let's exit.
Let's exit.
But I can't exit.
Interesting.
Eggs.
Ovaries.
Out.
Out. Cha-cha-cha. If these ovaries could talk, they would say,
eggs, ovaries, out. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.